Hello and welcome to Mangasplaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who haven't read much manga before. Hosted by me, Deb Aoki, David Brothers, Christopher Woodrow Butcher, and Chip Zdarsky. Follow along with our show notes and reading list at mangasplaining.com. And now you might tell yourself, maybe I shouldn't have said mangasplaining because actually today's episode is manwasplaining.
I didn't sign up for this.
True, he really didn't.
Got to keep it spicy. Why we are venturing into the land of Korean comics, aka webtoons, with The Boxer, Volume 1 by J.H. This is an interesting little one because it's, well, J.H. stands for Ji Hyung Jung. And I don't know much else about him because the Google skills I've acquired over the years to look up Japanese manga information completely fails me with Korean stuff. So we're just going to have to wing it. But I brought it to the team because it's something I read on Webtoon and something that I got introduced to because Yen Press, new imprint Ise Press, selected this as one of their first print releases. So I was intrigued. I read it. And the next thing I knew, I spent way too much money reading it on Webtoon. It was really compelling. And, you know, I have way too much disposable time and income. And the next thing I knew, I read like 80, 90 chapters. I really enjoyed it.
Whoa.
So explain how Webtoons works.
Ah.
Like okay. In terms of payment stuff.
Oh, well, that's the tricky thing, right? Because it varies by different companies.
Okay.
In the terms of like the Webtoon with a capital W site, which is what The Boxer is serialized on, you can read a good many chapters for free. And then it gets to the point where it says you have to use a daily ticket, one free ticket per day. So you can read one chapter per day. But if you really want to keep reading, then you got to pay 3 coins. I don't know what 3 coins equals to in actual real money. Mm. I know you can buy like 100 coins for 120 coins for like $10. So Okay. Think of it that way. So I haven't done the math because I'm really bad at math. In fact, I should do my taxes. And that's another thing altogether. But you know, one of these days I wanted to figure out how much money did I actually spend on this? Because it's this kind of script funny money.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a longish series. But it goes through several arcs. But I found it really compelling and interesting, particularly since all of us kind of share this love or fascination with like Hajime no Ippo or Ashita no Joe. And this, I don't know. I mean, I was really intrigued by this story. One, because I thought the art was very elegant and interesting, was very minimalist, but strong. And the story starts on a certain trajectory, and then it kind of does something else that you don't expect. And Chip was correct when I sold the book. I spoiled it. Sorry. But I didn't realize because like when you read webtoons, right, it's just chapter after chapter after chapter after chapter. And then when you read it in a book, this is only 9 chapters.
Yeah.
80-something, 100-something that you'll eventually go through with this story. And so how this ends, it ends at a point before the thing I was describing to Chip. So I'm sorry.
I mean, luckily for you, my memory is so bad, I've completely forgotten what the spoiler was.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, so it works out really well. My terrible memory has come to the rescue again.
Well, that's excellent. Before I get any further, I should explain what the book is about. And the usual way we do that is I read the copy on the back of the book. It says, "He doesn't have the same hunger for superiority that drives every human being. The enigmatic you lives his life without joy or purpose. All aspects of the young man are a mystery to those around him, save for his superhuman athletic abilities. Yu has rhythm, grace, and power on the level of a top pound-for-pound fighters, and his potential is too much for the legendary Coach K to ignore. Taking the young prodigy under his wing, the two shock the world of boxing, fight by fight, as Coach K attempts to make Yu the greatest of all time. But what exactly compels Yu to keep entering the ring?" That's not exactly what happens in this first volume. It starts off with another character. Ryu is kind of like, let's see. Yu, the main character, is just kind of simmering in the background until it comes to a boil at the end. But anyway, I guess I kind of wanted to pass this around. This is our first venture into something very different. Let's see. How about David? What did you think of this one?
So I kept thinking about Chip getting mad at you for spoiling the comic when you recommended it and trying to figure out like when the spoiler was going to happen, which was kind of funny. Because there are a few characters who could have been the spoiler character that we're talking about, I think. But it was okay, I think. There's a thing with sports manga where if it stars a prodigy, it's usually not my bag. Someone who's like naturally gifted at the sport or is just like magically good, you know? Like there's less of the like effort and intensity and like progress that I like to see in things like this. But I get the feeling from what you're saying, it sounds like the series really goes places. So there's probably more of like the training and the gym environment that I like to see in stories like this. But it was interesting. I haven't read many Korean comics, I don't think, outside of just random, you know, webtoons when friends send them over, but nothing in depth, nothing, definitely no graphic novels, I don't think. So like looking at the art and everything being full color, it was like such a change from what we usually read for the podcast. But there were some cute characters, some interesting like coloring in different scenes, things like this I thought were kind of moody. But I think I would mark it down as not quite my bag.
Like, tell me
why. The prodigy thing. I know. I think like doing sports, watching sports, a lot of it is like seeing people strive to do their best or to make their, to fulfill their dream. Let's say, let's put it in comics terms. And a big part of that for me is seeing them being like, okay, what do I need to learn next? Or where are the gaps in my knowledge? What are the rules of the sport? Even like a lot of good sports manga are like, at least a little bit, explainer manga. Because it's like, how do you do this fundamental thing? How do you do this thing you may be good at or suited for? You know, that kind of thing. And this series doesn't have a lot of that in the first volume. It does start in a gym and there's, you know, a coach who can see the potential of one of the characters. And that's kind of cool. I like where that was headed. Especially, I'll throw a punch and see what happens approach to boxing. It's a lot of fun. But I think it's missing the effortful part right now. Do you think that comes later in the series?
Oh, like it definitely training does.
And things like that? Yeah.
It definitely does come later in both the NJ character, which is the boy with the green eyes, and with you, because what's not in this volume is what it was described on the back of the cover, which is Coach Tate takes you in and starts training him, but it's very different than what he expects. It's really interesting that way, because he's like, Kay is basically saying, I've trained tons of really gifted boxers, but I can't understand this boy's motivation because he's so dead-eyed and seems so emotionless. So, and that both excites him and scares him.
Cool.
It's fascinating. It gets more into his backstory. And as you know, you go through the story, he meets series of very interesting opponents who you kind of root for or you kind of want to know more about. And some are very scary and some are super ridiculous and funny. Like one character who just loves mohawks.
He's
really into his mohawk. And he makes everyone around him on his team get a mohawk because he's convinced mohawks make you strong.
There is a bit in Bleach. Like, I think after volume 55, where two characters on the good and bad guy side bond over their mohawk, like they're fighting and like bickering. And one guy's like, I thought you'd be a cool guy because you had a cool mohawk. And the guy's like, you think my mohawk's cool? But yeah, I think that kind of like having good foes is crucial for sports comics, especially because you want people who are both monsters, but then also people who are like the main characters of their own comic in a way, like not necessarily bad guys, but opponents. So I would like to see a little bit more of that here because the bully character is just like fully reprehensible at this point, you know? No, I should say one last thing about the boxer before we get someone else's take is I just watched Creed 3 last
week.
And Southpaw a couple of weeks before that. And then some other boxing movie that I'm spacing on right now. Like I have a lot of boxing on the brain, which is probably like tilting the scales a little bit.
It's kind of funny. Like that this is called The Boxer because it's not about boxing at all.
Oh, anymore.
Well, I mean, just kind of playing off with what David was saying, well, like there's no real training or rules or no element of explainer to this. And he's right. This has nothing to do with boxing. It's just like it's supernatural creatures blasting each other with their powers. Like there's no relation to anything real or the sport at all, at least in this first volume.
But so what did you think about it?
Yeah.
All right. So when I started on episode one, I was actively angry at Deb because the opening was so poorly drawn and so awkward. And I'm just like, oh, this, I can't, how am I going to read the whole thing? And then the art got better. The action scenes got better. And I should also state that I did not read the print version because I couldn't get a digital copy of the print version because this is a Webtoons comic. So I just read it on Webtoons. So for me, it was all vertical scrolling. And by the end, like you get the first 7 chapters free on here. By the end, I was just like, I need to know what happens next. This is great. But you know, unlike David, I wasn't hung up on the, you know, the lack of, you know, boxing. Working to better yourself up, because I immediately divorced this from actual sport, like right away, especially with the coach who was just like, I'll throw a punch. That's the way to find out if this guy's any good. Like, I'm like, okay, this has no basis in any reality. But yeah, as I went on, like the fight scenes and the use of the vertical scroll especially were really elegant and beautiful and just some fantastic visual bits in this. Like I was really kind of pulled along and I genuinely wanted to see what happened next. Like it felt like that guy was unstoppable. And like I know they're going to stop him because that's how these go, but like I was, you know, a little bit edge of my seat, like how is this other guy going to step up? How's that nerd going to handle this? Like what? Like this guy's a murderer. He's a demonic murderer. And so, yeah, I ended up using my tokens to read episode 8. Then I had to wait another day to like to read the one after and get more tokens. I felt like a child. Waiting for 24 hours so I could do it again. Like
get your next allowance.
Yeah. Because my parents wouldn't give me the coins. So yeah, I mean, I ended up like really, really liking it, but the weird thing is because you showed us some comparisons with the print, and like I don't think I could read this in print. I don't think it's anywhere near as good based on the pages I saw as the experience of reading it on a vertical scroll.
That's been what has been really fascinating for me with Webtoons is the pacing of the panels as you scroll. Like, you know, sometimes there'll be black in a space and it's a pause and then something revealed and then how it segues into the next panel based on, you know, this screen size scroll. It seems kind of musical almost. It's kind of neat. And especially, you know, if you've been creating comics all your life, thinking the panels are going to go across and down and all of a sudden the storytelling all just goes down. It's kind of revelatory.
Yeah. If there was a good way to convert stuff like this to print, if someone could figure out the secret to it, they'd be rich.
It's tricky, I'll say. Like I posted a couple examples of the print page versus the scrolling page, and it's really fascinating.
We can include those in the show notes as well, so everyone has an idea of what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, Yen is going to send me a PDF because I'm sorry, Chip. I didn't realize there was an ebook version.
It makes sense. Like I should have thought that one through. Sense. Yeah, like why would there be an ebook of the thing that's natively digital?
Chip, I'm curious. Did you read the Batman Family story that was a webtoon?
No, I mean it's been recommended to me by a bunch of people, but now that I've got Webtoon on my iPad, I'm probably going to check it out. Yeah, because it sounds like a fun, lighter kind of Batman story, which is kind of the opposite of what I do.
You do dark and gritty Batman Fallen from Space.
It's who I am, you know?
It's true.
I was actually more curious.
You are dark and gritty.
Because of what you were talking about for storytelling, to see how those characters would map onto a sort of a vertical scroll storytelling. rather than on the page, because I do think that they were thinking about both at the same time for that particular series, knowing that there would eventually be, like, there would definitely be a North American printed version.
Yeah, I mean, I've had instances in the past where I've been commissioned by DC and Marvel to do quote-unquote digital first books, and, like, they're basically asking me to split the page in half horizontally. So, like, all the panels have to be up above, all the panels below have to work together, because that's how they're going to present it digitally, as, like, half pages, and then they'll collect it again later. I don't know, Marvel also has, they do, on their Unlimited app, they've commissioned a bunch of, like, I don't know if they're called Marvel Infinite or whatever, but it, they're vertical scroll. Friend of ours and friend of the podcast, Jason Lowe, who I work with on Afterlift and All Nighter, he's doing a lot of those for Marvel right now. But I haven't looked at them closely to see if you can see the seams, like, where Marvel's just like, okay, yeah, this is where we turn this into a page, or if they're just letting them go wild to see. Yeah.
I've read a couple, and sometimes you can see, there's a lot of stories that are like someone falling from here to there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The vertical.
Yeah, yeah. There's the Wolverine one from the space station.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But mostly, I think they do a good job of kind of making them unique in a way that, making them different from like the mainline print comics in a good way.
Yeah. But none of them have been as strong as this, I think. Like, there's a lot of inventiveness happening here.
Mm-hmm. Is there? So, here's my take, because no one's asked me.
Jump in, Chris.
And that's my favorite time to give a take. Yeah. I think this is bad. I think this is a bad comic that is super compelling. I think it's a bad story that is really good comics, is what I actually think about this one. This very much reads to me like a webcomic or, again, amateur comic from someone who's never read anything except for the type of thing that they're making. Like, this is a webcomic by someone who's only ever read webcomics before and maybe seen some anime. And there's no, like, life drawing. For example, there's no actual drawing underneath a lot of the drawings. It's fascinating because it's bad, but it's compelling. Like, it's someone who's figured out the formula of what makes a webtoon work by making you want to keep flicking through and flicking through and flicking through and having all of these character beats, except until chapter 7, where you get where the nerd character finally fights back, none of the characters seem to have any kind of interiority. They're all just a collection of cliches, like the dark-haired boy going, "Is anything really worth it?" It's like, oh my God, I've seen that anime before. I am 45. Like, and the, like, you know, light-haired psycho, like, Bakugo much. Like, it's all just, it's all very, very been done in with, like, individual characters in other series smushed together here with someone who has internalized, deeply internalized, how webcomics work, how webtoons work, the vertical scroll. So it's really polished, and it's really cracky, for lack of a better term, that Dev has used. Like, it's just something that, like, you just want to see what happens next. You just want to see what happens next. But I don't think there's, at least in the first 9 chapters, and I did the same thing. I read the 7 free ones. I used my token, waited a day, read the next one. There's nothing there for me. Like, there's just not, like, it's just so, I just read the, I was listening to the Baki episode that we did, and I found the same thing. Like, it felt very hollow, but Baki had got 140 something volumes, like, and there were other things there, and this is just like, it's a collection of other things, and I think that there's a high degree of craft and skill, but there's no heart whatsoever, and the characters are kind of hollow and reprehensible, all of them. All of them. Like, when the nerd gets a pass, but he's also like, I think it's weird to start giving someone some character development, like, at the very end of the first book and then cutting it off. You know what I mean? Like, maybe we've just been conditioned by manga. Maybe we need, like, everyone's motivation in the first exercised chapter. But it, yeah, I get why this is so compelling, but I think that as soon as you read more webtoons, you're going to be like, oh, that was good at being a webtoon, but, like, I get what other things can go on and can happen with this medium. I think it is reverse Yotsuba Volume 1, for lack of a better term.
I will say, though, that this, I think this is an example, again, of a first volume not giving you enough of a hook to see what really makes it special.
Hmm.
It's because this setup, the way that they've set up the characters in the story here, you think you know what's going to happen next. I can assure you, it does not go the way you think it's going to go.
Yeah, and that was how you sold it. And I totally get it. Like, watching that psycho get his comeuppance in Chapter 8 was lovely. It was very satisfying. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is good. I'm glad he's getting it. And it's like, I don't know anything about him. I literally don't know anything about him. He's just like an asshole who gets his comeuppance. What, like, it's just, it feels good in the moment.
You know that he's cruel. You know that he kind of like, he learned.
But why?
He learned that doing this gives him like a charge and gives him like this feeling of power. Like they actually do.
Sure. The mountaintop thing at the end of Chapter 9. Yeah, that's true. But that's your second, that's your second pay or time gated chapter.
Yeah. In a very long thing. Yeah. And it hooks you long enough to get you to that point.
No,
like I love the fact that the nerd character, like, you don't actually really get into him until towards the end of this. Like, it doesn't play out like I normally would expect something like this too, where you kind of like lay all these seeds and like slowly kind of build him up. Just like, oh yeah, this guy. Like, I've kind of had him off to the side. I didn't even think of him as like somebody that was going to step up until all that kind of happens.
I thought he was going to die for a while, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also it was like, and like, I don't know. There was something about.
Yeah. Well, that's the end. The end is like, I'm going to pay the tokens and read Chapter 10. Like the heart of this is the candy. It's just like they're really good at making you want to know what happens in the next chapter. And then they hit you with like the, oh, okay, there's actually backstory here, like later on. And like, eventually they're going to do the training that David requires out of these stories. Like, yeah, I don't know. They better. Yeah. I quite enjoyed it.
But like this scene, right? Where like, this is him before he became an arrogant asshole, right? Mm. This is the scene where he first discovers how, this is Big Son, right? Baksan? I don't know how to pronounce it in Korean, I'm sorry. discovers that he's actually very strong. At first he's, you know, amazed and awed by that, but you can tell, and it shows his progression and then he gets more and more arrogant and he starts abusing his power. And then immediately after that, he gets his comeuppance, right? But here's the spoiler about it. That's the last you're going to see of this character for quite a while.
Yeah.
Well, he's in the hospital at the end.
Does he come back as a good guy?
He's gone. He's gone for like maybe 60 or 70 chapters.
That rules. I love that. The scene you just showed us where he kind of realizes what power is and like the draw of being feared. I liked what they were doing with the colors in that bit. The kind of fading from red to blue, bluish pink. It reminds me a lot of Meredith McLaren, who does a lot of image books. I think she has a new one called Black Cloak. She's a very similar palette. Yeah. And it's really, I don't know, it's pleasant. Like, it's nice to look at. And I think it's actually significantly better than the stuff in the front of the book, which is a little more direct and less, like, emotional. I guess there's realistic coloring color versus story. Impressionistic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the coloring. I like the limited palette. That helps a lot. It did have, there was a bit of a vibe of, I'm sure Chris will agree here, a bit of a vibe of like early 2000s webcomic coloring.
Oh yeah.
And especially in the method of it, like you can tell they're just like, they got a multiply layer over like the loose kind of like pencil drawings and just throwing the color behind and calling it a day. It took me a while to get past that part, but it's a lot more obvious in the first couple of chapters, and it is later when they kind of let things kind of be a bit airier, I think. The payoffs in this are really fun. Like, I just, when the guy wakes up in the hospital, I was just like, oh, that's so great. because like this is where the vertical kind of really works in terms of the reveals, because like I just love, like, I'm just holding it up, but like him missing and the look in his eyes, it's just like slow, really beautiful. And then just like, I love the top down of the punch.
Yeah.
You know, And then all of a sudden you're like, you're in his kind of internal world. And then you've got this like really, like he's in the guy's eye and you don't kind of realize it till you move down. Then just that simple pullback.
Oh, that is pretty good.
Yeah, that
all of this. And then boom, you're in the hospital. Like I almost cheered at that point. I'm like, oh, that's really good.
I think Deb had one too, where they turned the vertical splashes horizontal for the print edition.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, see?
The vertical's way better on that. And I will say that sequence at the very end of the book, very last chapter, where he's sitting on the mountain and then he gets beat and you pull back from the mountain to realize that the other guy is not just sitting on a bigger mountain, but is bigger than the entire landscape as like a visual metaphor. Yeah, that's actually really good storytelling. Like, I actually think that's quite, quite good. It was probably the best sequence in the whole book in terms of inventiveness and like thoughtfulness and showing some characters' interiority. It's too bad it came in the last chapter, but it did page turn you right to the end of that book. And it just, it feels, maybe it felt manipulative.
And they built up to it for the first chapter, you know?
This is like a Webtoons thing. They did put up that in the first chapter. That's true. I don't know. It's really struck me, man.
It's good. That concept shows up in Vagabond as well, when Takezo realizes like there's no such thing as invincible under the sun. There's always another mountain to climb.
Sure, yeah.
And I think it also has to do with Sun Wukong and Journey to the West. There's a point where like he doesn't realize he's standing in the palm of someone much, much larger than him.
Yeah. Jin Yang has a take on that in American Born Chinese as well. Like you're standing in the palm, the five fingers, the five pillars of heaven are actually someone's palm. There's always someone bigger. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that especially is a vital idea for sports comics to have. Like the thought that like you might be good, you might be excellent, but someone else plays differently and possibly in a way that like directly counters what you're good at. And for one-on-one like boxing especially, I think that's kind of interesting.
This one threw me off, like when he and then he just punched a hole in the space.
Yeah.
And see, I instantly got that because I see that affect a lot of the various violent comics. And it actually made me think, like, Deb, you've read a lot of manga at this point. Does this series seem familiar or derivative to you in any way? Or is it pretty fresh?
I'll say in like Webtoon, there's a whole subgenre of Webtoon. You know, the ones that aren't about romance and being reborn as a villainess and blah, 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 blah. There's a whole subgenre of a Webtoon that's all about extreme violence and getting back at bullies. And most of them are really super detailed and super visceral in their violence and blood and guts and, you know, the punching that happens. This one I thought was elegant in that they used very simple lines to tell a story that was kind of almost like animation. You know, like there's a certain elasticity to what's happening in the action. Like, and this idea of using, you know, the red and blue streaks and these red and blue color schemes. Like Ryu is blue, right? And then the coach is red. And then Inje is green, right? So like, for example, the first boxer, right, in the intro scene where there's a guy who we're assuming talking to a younger Ryu, is yellow and his eyes are yellow. And that was like a visual cue. So you could go, oh, that's not Inje's dad. They look similar.
I did think about that. Like as the series went on.
Yeah. Inje's dad has green eyes. So you go, oh, okay. So that gave me a little clue that, this is not Inje's dad in the beginning. Like some of the characters do look similar. I think he puts a certain amount of care into making the characters look distinct. But I think the color story helps you follow this, what's happening. Like when there's the punching that happens, you see that streak of red and blue, you can tell who's throwing a punch, right? Who's getting hit. I thought it was a really interesting color story that was happening.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. It's something that I found fascinating because you don't, you know, manga is black and white. So you don't get to play with it like that?
I'm reading a manga right now that has color-coded characters, and it's driving me nuts. Every time they're like, oh, really? Like, red and blue are here, and it's just like the same gray tone. Like, one slip.
Oh, no!
And they call each other like red and blue?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's like a Power Rangers thing.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I think, is it Yotsuba? We've had a few where people are like, oh, it's the girl with the blue hair. And I'm like, why would you even do that in the black and white?
There were bits and pieces of this that felt familiar, like maybe from other delinquent manga or, you know, violence manga. There was one punch, the one that the coach throws at
you.
Page 58 and 59. Mm-hmm. This one, which reminded me of a punch that's in One Piece when Luffy fights a guy named Whopple. And it's like there's one panel that sets up the punch, and then there's like a 4-chapter flashback, and then they finish the punch, like justify the violence. It's one of my favorite bits. It really leapt out at me as I was flipping through. So there are bits and pieces that feel like other comics or other, even boxing manga. Like there's an Ippo joke at one point. Mm-hmm. I think there's like a cross counter gag at another point. Yeah. Like I feel like it hits a lot of buttons, but it's not quite there for me yet. But in a way where I'm like, oh, like I totally see why Deb spent $80,000 on this.
Just so,
I mean,
I will calculate how much I spent on this one just out of curiosity.
So knowing that it changes down the line, that it becomes a more, not explainery, but like actual training kind of takes place, are you interested in reading it further, David?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I would hope that it's in like volume 2 when it starts changing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that the way it sets the characters, it sets up the kind of positions it puts them in, and the one guy being like, is hitting people fun, is like it's a cool entryway for like a boxer, you know?
Yeah.
It makes me wonder like how it's going to go for him.
Yeah. It's funny, like it kind of has to become a book with training involved, because this whole volume is just about like their supernatural abilities.
Yeah.
You know, you hint at the training that like the nerd got from his dad, but yeah, you would need that extra bit to kind of to level everyone up from chapter to chapter as they face kind of bigger and bigger obstacles in this Mike Tyson's punch out comic or whatever.
Page 177, he throws his first 1-2, and it like immediately like knocks out an expert boxer, you know?
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
But the coach's grin on the next page is so good.
this is very much, maybe I'm digging it because it feels like,
yeah.
It feels like, you know, real classic superhero comics. Like when you get your powers, you don't train. You get your powers, you just go and you do the thing. It's not like, oh, I better practice my web swinging again, you know, 10 hours a day before I get really good at it. Like, no, you're just instantly good. And it's all about like, yeah, the grand fights and like digging deep within to like use those abilities.
But that's like something I love about Spider-Verse, for example, where you actually get training montages and sequences, and it builds the character because it allows for character interaction moments like between Miles and Peter, or other Peter, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get that like back and forth. You get to see the hero failing, and it's good. Like that kind of thing is actually.
Well, I'm not saying it's not good.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I prefer one over the other. It just is why I vibed with this, I think. Because for the most part, that's not the case in the comics.
Yeah.
Even, I don't know, even like the first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, like there was like a 5-minute thing of him just like, oh, I'm going to shoot a web and I'm going to swing into a building. And then like 2 minutes later, he's fine. He's Spider-Man now.
There was a montage. It was okay.
He gets it.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You get your montage and you check off that box.
No montage, no sale. That's how I feel about these.
I mean, there's something about giving a formula that delivers and makes you feel good. And you know, you go for it because it hits those beats. A lot of romance comics on Webtoons, you do it because it scratches that itch. But I think out of all the books I've read on Webtoon, this one shook me a lot because how the characters build, how the story unfolds, the way that it goes from very funny to very serious and dark, the way that the character evolves over a long period of time, happens in a way that was so unexpected for me. And I thought it was really smart character building and storytelling, so that when you do get to the end, you're like, oh, that was awesome. That feels so good. That was so hard fought to get to here. And even when you get to the side stories, you go like, yeah, I want to know what happened to that character, that side character. Oh, I want them to be happy.
Is it over?
Mm-hmm. It's complete.
Okay.
How many chapters have you read total? All of it? Or?
Yeah.
Whoa,
I'm just looking, and it's episode 123 is the last one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a solid run. About 10 volumes, maybe?
Mm-hmm. I guarantee if you read it, it's very satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And from, I was going to say, from episode 105 all the way to 123, they're all labeled spin-offs. Spin-off number one, spin-off number two. So I'm like...
Well, maybe epilogues, yeah, or something like that for single characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like side stories. Like, what happened to that character afterwards?
Mm. Yeah. I'm sure I'll read it all. Mm. Because I think, you know, Chris is right. There's flaws there. It's not good in a lot of ways, but I think it's actually great in terms of like making you want more, which is a hard thing to do. If everyone was able to do that, then like everyone would be a very successful comic artist or storyteller. Though, I mean, the Webtoons model is interesting because I'm just like, I want to pay a sum of money to read all of it. I don't want to buy a bunch of tokens and like do the math. And is this enough tokens for me to read all of this? Like, this is my old man brain.
We already solved books.
Like, yeah. Exactly. I'm not so old that I demand it be in a physical book format. I'll do the vertical reading.
Do you guys not play games with fake currency? Like,
yeah,
I mean, Pokemon Go?
Yeah, like, no. like Pokemon Go. Like, you pay money into the ecosystem and then you pay with the fake coins, so it doesn't feel like you're spending real money. I think the idea here is that once you're hooked on Webtoons, you just drop a 20 in. And don't think about it, and then you're just dropping 20s whenever you need more tokens.
Yeah, that's what I don't like.
Yeah, well, that's why this story is designed the way it is. It's very, very compelling. And you get character development in chapter 50. You have to keep reading to get to the meat of the story because they want to charge you. I can't divorce the model from the story. And I think reading it, and I don't think that reading it as a book, as like a 9-chapter book, did it a lot of favors either. That's the thing. Although it's way better. I got to be honest. It's way better as a first volume than Solo Leveling is. And Solo Leveling is 10 times as popular as this. That's like the biggest Korean webtoon. They just announced the anime this week. It's coming in next winter. And if you read that first book, it's like the guy not only wasn't thinking about print, I don't think he was thinking about the story. Like, it's very, very... Like, there's like one page that's got two floating panels on it kind of stuff. And then you go into one page that's got like two, again, floating panels. And it's just because none of the panels he drew as a webtoon could fit on a page. Like, real, like, I don't think that this is going to be huge down the road kind of vibes. Mm. Anyway, by the fourth volume, it looks like it's like professionally illustrated anime. Like, it's on the page. Like, it's the glow up is insane. And this, you get some of that glow up from first chapter to the ninth chapter for sure. Storytelling gets better. Color gets better. Even the way that the characters are drawn gets better. But yeah, I can't shake the fact that it is designed first to be compelling. And then you're slotting the story around the conventions of the medium, which feels bad to me as someone who doesn't love this medium, loves comic, like loves print comics with like the page and the whatever. Mm-hmm. So I find it fascinating because I'm such a big webcomic guy from all the way back from like the early 2000s webcomic stuff. Like, some of my favorite comics makers are still webcomics people, but they tend to be people that have transcended the 3-panel strip format. You know what I mean? Like, where everything was Penny Arcade for a while. And then people are like, I can do something that doesn't look like Penny Arcade if I want to. And then it turns into something really exciting and interesting and good. And I feel like this is like, no, I have figured out the formula for this, like, buy a chapter and that's how I get paid a pittance kind of a situation that's going on. But it doesn't, but the content there isn't as compelling to me. Like, if I had to recommend a manga that I think, or manhwa on a webtoon, which is in a different platform, of course, you got to install this app too.
Oh, no.
Tappytoon has one called, the name is dumb, but it's called What Does the Fox Say? But it's a lesbian erotic thriller that is like deeply disturbing. And it's like, It's compelling and exactly
fucking like Skinamax.
Yeah, or? like Skinamax, like hard 1980s, and it's Korean, so it you'd think it's not going to go that far, and then all of a sudden it super does, and it's great. Like it is like women in high powered like finance positions being like super awful to each other with like weird sexual dynamics. Super compelling stuff. And that uses the medium in a way that like it uses the medium exactly the same way. It's like I have to find out what happens next chapter and buy $300 dues or whatever the stupid currency on that platform is.
The idea of vertical scrolling with erotic content intrigues me because it's the modern version of those pens in which when you turn the pen upside down, the clothes start to disappear on the figures. It's like that. You just scroll and reveal. Oh, I saw some boobs. Oh, I saw some genitals.
It's like dial up back in the day where like the image would load from the top and then
yeah, it's exactly lines at a time. Yeah, there you go. Glory I don't know. I'm just not buying into the idea that this creator had that kind of foresight. Like, oh, I'm just gonna like. I'm not going to do character stuff until chapter 50, and I'm going to like hook people at the end of every one of these. Like, because the beginning is so, I don't want to say amateurish, but it's like very much someone just like, just kind of going for it.
Why don't you want to say amateurish?
Well, because I mean, they're a professional, like, I don't know, they're putting in the work and they're getting paid, like, they're technically a professional. Hmm. But the beginning is just like it's poorly drawn, like it really genuinely is, and it doesn't feel like a person at a level where they're making those kind of like real tactical decisions. Like this feels very much like a gut level comic. Maybe there was some kind of planning, like maybe they knew they would reveal this about this character at this point. But yeah, maybe they're just like. You know, I think you said at the beginning, like, this is a webcomic made by someone who just reads webcomics. And so just like, there's an intrinsic, just like, oh, this is how you do it. This is me just doing it on my instinct. And it's coming out as a real hook, like, with the end of every chapter. Yeah. I don't know. Regardless, I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. I can't remember the phrasing you used, Christopher, but something about, like, doing things for the format or for the genre struck me. Because I think that, you know, kind of the format is the story in a certain way. Like superhero stories are told in a certain way because of the format they're sold in. Mm. And I think this is the same thing, but I think it's sort of like value neutral for me. But it did make me go back and look at Hajime no Ippo volume 1 and Ashita no Joe volume 1, which Deb mentioned earlier as being, you know, stuff that we generally like on the podcast. And it struck, like, I was really surprised by how quickly those series get to the point.
Yeah.
Like by the end of Ippo chapter 1, like he's in the gym, he kind of knows what he might be good at, and everyone's like, oh, like you got potential, like we're gonna see where this is gonna go, and he's sort of like on his journey. While with this one, you kind of chapter 1 is almost more of like chapter 1 of 9 for, you know, the first bit of the story.
Oh yeah. Sorry, the first 8 chapters of this are one Shonen Jump introductory chapter.
Yeah,
that's a great.
And then the ninth chapter is like a side story you get that's like 4 pages in the manga, and they tap to it's the omake at the end where you find out that the guy wakes up in the hospital, or a side story, or the one that they do, you know, a little bit down the road, like if it's online.
Does it change your opinion of it slightly if you just view those as one chapter? If you view the first 9 chapters of this as one chapter,
it's 200 pages, dude. Like,
yeah, but it's not even like this was like the quickest read that we've done on manga explaining.
Probably I don't know. I got through Baki ever. A lot quicker than this.
That's why you miss all the subtext.
Non toxic hyper masculinity. I'm gonna put that in a banner on the top of the website.
But Dev, what was your take?
Well, doesn't like for example, like. I firstly find French BD hard to read because it's so compressed, like so much, so many panels per page and so much happening at each tiny panel. And then American comics get a little bit easier. There's fewer panels than BD and less dense, but it's still hard for me to read. Manga seems to have more room to breathe, like fewer, like 5 panels max generally. This one, takes it to another extreme where it's like maybe three panels, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe. Just one panel. So it's like, it's much more spacious in some ways.
Oh, yeah.
It unfolds at a very luxurious pace because it's like, you know, it's just scrolling, right? And like, they're not thinking mm-hmm. about, I have to do 20 pages. They're just scrolling. And so like, I was so surprised to get the book and realize, wait, this book only goes up to this part? You know?
Where's the other 100 chapters?
Yeah.
Where's like, no, I expected it to at least get to the point where it starts to sink into you, like, this is not the comic I thought this was going to be.
Yeah.
This is subverting everything I thought a boxing story was going to be.
I don't know. I just use my coins to unlock chapter 10 while we were talking. And the opening's so good. It's so good. It's just the coach. Well, it's just the coach standing there angry while these two like nobodies are just talking about how he's been standing there for days now. And they're like showing their moves in front of the coach and like hoping the coach will like pay attention to them. He just goes, I'm not interested in small fry. Get lost. And the next panel is them walking away, hugging each other like they've had their hearts broken. And as you scroll up, he got his eyes. He's like,
I want him.
It's like, it's so good. It's funny. There's a drama. Yeah.
I think that's a great example of what makes Webtoons a success. Like, it's instant gratification, like with the coins and all that stuff. It's not really my bag, but the stories feel satisfying despite being so airy.
Mm.
And I think a lot of it's like the aesthetic. Like, you'll get one or two cool moments per chapter. Yeah. I recently read for the first time the Saga of the Swamp Thing, like the Alan Moore, John Totleben, Rick Veitch, and a bunch of other people stuff. And it takes forever to read one issue of that.
Oh, yeah. It's insane.
Yeah, not quite as long as Watchmen, but like, it takes a while.
Yeah, that's and a this dance.
Book, I probably read like maybe two issues of Swamp Thing amount of time. You know, it flew by. And that kind of pacing, that kind of feel, like, you don't really get that. Like, I love superhero comics. There are very few like Cape comics I read where I'm like, wow, that was a breeze, you know, because it's kind of not the point, not the draw of the genre.
Well, 22 pages for $5 instead of 30 coins.
Oh, 20 pages.
Yeah, right. 20 pages coins, for $5 instead of
22 at DC. 22.
Sometimes there's backup features.
Yeah.
It's you can't do that. And manga, I feel like it's a slider. How much story is there? And, you know, Mayday is all the way at one end. Like, it's so dense that you're paying like $20 for a hardcover album, but it's going to take you 3 days to read 20.
That's like 80,000 words.
Yeah,
in
it's
it.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And at the other end is Webtoons, but it's something that you're supposed to read, not even on your iPad, but on your phone. Like, it was interesting looking at those pages on your iPad. I'm going to look at it on my iPad later because you didn't get the full image because they know exactly how big a screen, like how long, how many pixels high a screen is.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those panels are for that. And I think that that's fascinating. And it's like, it's something you're supposed to look at your phone. And I don't think you're supposed to be, there's a really good article and I'll throw it in the show notes. You guys know the show Emily in Paris. I've never watched it because I don't watch television. And I say that as derisively as I possibly can.
Yeah. Wow.
No, I'm just not watching a lot of scripted anything. I read a really good article about it, and it was about how Emily in Paris was the first TV show that you're supposed to watch while you're sitting on the couch distracted playing with your phone. Like, if you pay too much attention to it, there's not enough there. It's just really, you're just supposed to like something funny or shocking or like interesting is supposed to just happen like at like random spikes to keep you like, oh, what? Oh, okay. And the rest of the time, it's almost like beautiful scenery of some like, you know, white girl walking like around Paris, like an interactive screensaver because you're looking at your phone.
Yeah.
This is the thing you're looking at your phone. This is supposed to have half of your attention. You're supposed to like flick through and not really be like hyper invested in it while something else is on in the background is how I feel about this particular type of webtoon. And I don't think that that's bad. I think that it is a different medium than manga, and it's a different medium than webcomics for sure, because you can see people who are just taking comics and putting them on this and actually people who really understand how this medium works. And JH understands this medium, in my opinion, from the nine chapters I've read. Like, they know how to wring every little bit out of this very cool new thing, but it's not what I want necessarily. And if you do end up paying hyper attention to it, like Deb does, you could go deep instantly, right? Like, it's even better than the Shonen Jump yeah. app in some ways, because if you get to the end of it, at the end of every chapter, there's links to three other stories that you might like that are kind of similar as well. The discoverability on Webtoon, even though it's one of the challenges, is huge. It's like, oh, you got to the end of The Boxer. Here, click this and you can read the next seven chapters of a book for free. Like, Shonen Jump wishes they could do that on their digital. Like, they don't have that adherence in the same way. So it's wild to me. This is a different medium than manga. This is a different medium than webcomics, a different medium than American comics, that's for sure. And I think the ways in which it is successful are not ways generally in which I am interested in comics. Is maybe my actual thesis on this episode. Please delete everything else I've said.
It's funny, this may surprise you, but I feel exactly the opposite to you. This is like anti-distraction comics. This is the comic that's designed for somebody who maybe does get distracted quite easily, and it gives them something to really focus on. Because a lot of the manga that we read, I'll read a bit at a time, take a break, check something out, check my email. Like, I get far more distracted reading stuff that isn't like this. Because this is very much, I'm in it. Like, I really need to see what's happening next. Like, this is not a thing that I'm doing while I'm also paying attention to anything else. This may be like one of the most focus heavy books we've read. It may have been different if I read it in print, though. Because I think that's one of the things here. Like, I am obviously a novice to this. I've only read a few kind of scrolling comics, but the act of reveal with this is what really keeps me interested. Like, even just now showing you that the gag of the guys like walking away crying or whatever, and then the coach's eyes, and then the dialogue, like, those are all revealed, boom, boom, boom. Whereas with manga or North American comics, whatever, you know, you open the page and like, okay, you take it all in. You can't help but take it all in. And we've said before that, you know, page turns are your only real reveals. But on this, it's like every step is a reveal. Like, I found myself just really focused on this because of that fact. And the fact that they're so good at parlaying that ability to reveal by doing cool things like, you know, the giant eye as you kind of go along, and then the reveal of what it is, and then the reveal of the hospital, or even the last image of him like as a kid crying. It's like micro reveals, yeah, micro page turns or something. It's interesting.
Sure.
I think he's right. The like a lot of the reason why I read violence comics are the action scenes, and like seeing like the panel to panel flow is really thrilling. And I've seen with other webtoons, and from a quick flip through with this one as well, like, I definitely get the vibe that Chip is talking about. Like, there's a moment where it's like, oh, like, how did they pull this off? How did they trick me in this way?
Yeah.
And I think for Deb to have read 120 something chapters, hopefully there's some good reveals in there.
Yeah.
And again, that could be just my newness to all of this too. Maybe after reading like five of these series, I'll just be like, yeah, okay. Actually, Chris is right. Like, I'm not paying full attention to this anymore. But as a novice, I'm just like, I'm totally pulled into it.
It's like how the first time you read The Focus Totality of My Psychic Powers, you're like, oh, what is that? That sounds really dangerous. Like the 20th time, you're like, all right, Psylocke, like, wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I think this was a good, interesting little foray into something a little different. Let's maybe go around the table and close off. Start with David.
Yeah, so this is, I do like it more than at the beginning of the conversation, as it's the manga explaining way.
Yes, it is, yeah, so, yeah.
It's still not quite my bag, but I like what Deb is saying about where it's going. And like, my personal taste in sports comic tends to run more towards Slam Dunk, Ashita no Joe, Hajime no Ippo type stuff, where it's like very grounded, very real. Kuroko's Basketball is like the anti-Slam Dunk to me, where it's all like magic and And this is in like the Kuroko's Basketball like realm of sports comics, where there's like a few fundamentals in there, but like one guy is just like magically evasive all the time. But it's fun. And I don't think I would have picked it up on my own. So I'm glad Deb brought it to the podcast.
Yeah.
That's good. How about you, Chip?
Well, Chris turned me around on this. I hate it.
Good.
I feel your hate. Be one with your hate. I quite like it. Obviously, as I, you know, spent my free tokens or whatever for chapter 10. Yeah, this is one of the books that I'm going to continue on.
Sounds good. Chris?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the thing you've turned me around on is actually I was kind of down on the whole format, maybe, because the idea of that like gamification of reading hit me in a bad way when I was reading this, and I really felt it at the end of every chapter. I don't know if I did a good job of explaining that. Yeah, it can be insanely compelling, and I think that those two things are linked. So can't, you know, be like complimentary of it for being compelling by then shitting on its format for being compelling. So yeah, you turn me around on that. I'll give
hate
you that.
The game, not the player.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad to see this. And as much as I think that it is designed for webtoons and the vertical scroll, I do think that the pages that you were showing us of how it's been translated, the page work better than almost any webtoon I've seen up to this point in print. I'm going to have to obviously give the new round of stuff from Ise Press a closer look. But yeah, it actually, I think... I don't, especially because you get 9 chapters at once and you're going to want to read to the end of the book. I do think that slice of comics is probably a better way to read it than one chapter at a time for the average reader, especially for the uninitiated, which is ostensibly who this podcast is for. So yeah, I don't know. But then Chip read it in a chapter at a time and was hooked and needed to go to the next one. But I still submit that he probably had the TV on in the background.
No.
Sure, Chip.
Total darkness. Petting total darkness on my iPad.
Talking to Jessica.
He was reading in the den.
No. I told the cat to get out. I told Jessica to get out. This is my alone time.
I need my boxer time. Especially after boxer time. your final thoughts? What's your last sales pitch for people who are thinking about maybe manhwa breaking the seal, so to speak?
I mean, I will say that, like, if you spent all your time, I think this is kind of like people who read American comics kind of go through this period of slight discomfort reading manga because the visual conventions, the story conventions, the way the pages, the flow, the characters can feel uncomfortable at first. And I think the same thing happens with webtoons. Like the first time I started reading Korean comics, I was like, I don't know if this art's not doing it for me or I'm not sure about this flow. But then, you know, I think it's kind of like you get used to it or you start kind of like some, I think, are more comfortable for me to get into as a primarily manga reader, just as some manga is comfortable for American readers to read, like Vinland Saga or Witch Hat Atelier, because the art craft is so good, right? The storytelling and the visual craft there. But, you know, like, say, Pop Team Epic is a little hard to get into, or my lesbian experience with loneliness is hard to get into, because it requires that you have spent some time in the world of manga and manga storytelling. And I think that's what's happening with The Boxer a little bit, because by the time I read The Boxer, I had already been reading a lot of webtoon. So, but also, too, I appreciate the elegance of what it does and the storytelling, because I've read a lot of manga, and as I read this story, I was like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Or like, oh, is that how that character turns out? And oh, this relationship that was building up, I didn't think it was going to go that way. So it had enough surprises and interesting twists and also kind of very obvious nods to the manga influences it has, like Hajime no Ippo and Ashita no Joe. Like a lot of webtoons have manga, definitely manga backbeats that you can recognize. So I think I like The Boxer best out of all of the violence fighting webtoons I've read so far. But, you know, I think, David, you might enjoy Viral Hit. You might want to check that one out. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for a list of your bloodiest webtoons after the podcast.
You'll like Viral Hit. Viral Hit's about a guy who's bullied, and then he finds this YouTube channel where this guy with a chicken mask is giving him how to fight. And it goes step by step. It goes into like Taekwondo, goes into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And the guy in the chicken mask apparently teaches this weak guy all these different fighting techniques. And it's apparently got consultation from real martial artists. So nice. It has that learning in there that you like, but also that kind of senseless violence and revenge that's very satisfying.
So the first episode says, this episode contains strong language that may be upsetting for some readers. So I'm in.
Crank it up and see what you think.
The David signal in the sky. Yeah. Warning, this contains.
And then David shoves open the door, goes, here's my coins. Let's go, bitch.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Coins.
Sorry.
It's all good.
Anyway. All right. That was a very interesting foray to a slightly off our usual path of manga explaining. So let's take a break and we'll come back with, I don't know, maybe something more along the lines of what we usually do. Be back.
Why might you want to learn a new language? For some of us on Manga Explaining, we use our knowledge of Japanese on the podcast to compare the English editions of manga to the Japanese. And honestly, reading more manga natively in Japanese, or bande dessinée in French, or webtoons in Korean, it's definitely a dream, and a great way to get there might be Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is a trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert in language learning for 30 years, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Rosetta Stone offers fast language acquisition, immersing you in a language with no English translations, an intuitive process, and it's designed for long-term retention. It uses true accent technology to give you feedback on your pronunciation, and it's convenient with desktop and smartphone app options for offline learning. It's also an amazing value, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Manga Explaining learners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, and we are back, and it's time for our everyone's favorite segment, or at least mine, shout-outs. Let's see if anyone, well, please, Chip, I hope you had some time for fun. Did you have anything you'd like to shout out?
I did. I read a book.
Our commenters are going to be so happy. They're all like, poor Chip, one day he'll get to have fun again.
Yeah, I mean, I kept it very much consuming work in the friend group. I read Morgan Murray's novel, Dirty Birds. And okay. For anyone that doesn't know, Morgan Murray is Kate Beaton's husband. Hmm. And yeah, he wrote this novel a couple years ago, and I've been meaning to get around to it, and I got into it, and it seemed like my bag, because it's a kind of a coming-of-age story of a young man traveling from the prairies to become a poet in Montreal. Ticked off all of my Mordecai Richler boxes. And it was good. It's one of those books where, like, you know, it's funny and it's charming, but then it takes a turn about halfway through. I don't want to spoil it fully, but Leonard Cohen becomes a character in the book, and it becomes very, very funny. and yeah, I highly recommend it. Hmm. A lot of talent in that household.
Sickening. How you hate them?
How I hate them.
All right, David, how about you?
I I mentioned Ashita no Joe and Ippo earlier, so I might as well shout out Creed 3, the third entry in Michael B. Jordan's remix and reboot of the Rocky series. I saw it a couple of weeks ago. Like, I like the series a lot. You know, I watched 1 and 2 with my family when I went back home a while back, and it was good. It was a very traditional kind of boxing story, not very much like this at all, I don't think, though it shares like a few elements, like the delinquency and, you know, surprising violence. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the anime influence on Creed 3. Mm. And so I basically had to see it super fast before anyone spoiled it for me to ask about, hey, did you hear about the blah, blah, blah in Creed? And I saw it, and it was pretty good, but it was one of those references to a thing that was originally from something else, you know, like a third or fourth degree reference, which was kind of funny. Mm. But it was nice seeing someone kind of like push storytelling in American sports movies in a way that we don't see too often, kind of more figurative or, you know, like impressionistic, expressionistic, one of those two, whichever means like least real.
Impressionistic.
And it works. Impressionistic. There we go. But it works. It's not as good as the first two, I don't think, but it's like a worthy third part in the trilogy.
Mm. All right.
How about you, Chris? Anything interesting?
I was supposed to go see that with a buddy, but then I went to Japan instead of seeing Creed 3. So sorry, but I will catch up at some point. We'll have a discussion. It'll be good.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, I saw a movie. It's funny. We were recording the podcast a couple days late because Deb was hit with very inclement weather. I'm glad you're safe and to have power again. I went to the movie premiere of Air last night, the Michael Jordan movie that is not about Michael Jordan, is in fact about Air Jordan's the shoe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Athletic Lehman situation. Last, I went to the Taiwanese premiere, did not take a selfie with the giant standee that was there. It's a real movie of a movie. Y'all see Moneyball? Saw Moneyball for the first time ages over the ago, Christmas break, where it's like, we've put together a movie about a real thing that happened, and we have connected every dot. There are no hanging threads. It is like a movie. It's like that. It was a really interesting piece of like, we put together a movie that is a movie. There wasn't a lot outside of that. I think they made an interesting choice to keep Michael Jordan a really mythical figure. Like, you never see he's not in the movie. They don't have anyone playing him or giving his lines or whatever. It's all about his mom and dad.
Wild choice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Like, they talk about him as like a living myth, and you kind of realize about, I realized maybe the fourth very punk pop song into the movie. It's like, oh, this is not a movie about Michael Jordan. This is a movie about like all white people running Nike in Portland, Oregon in 1984. Because you couldn't pan around the Nike office, and it's just like, okay, here we go. It's not the Michael Jordan biopic that came out recently. It is a very different movie about like Phil Knight and Sonny. I don't remember his last name. The guy who like, you know, did a lot of good stuff for sports. And it's about the idea of creator participation in the end. And that's like, that kind of comes out in like the last act, where it's like, actually all of this stuff you're talking about Michael Jordan, what made this such a big deal was that he gets a percentage of every Air Jordan shoe sold. And that's the first time that ever happened. And it's about empowering athletes to control their own image and their own merchandise and things like that. And that's what makes this revolutionary. All this stuff before that was kind of a lead up, and Nike's not really important. And all the stuff about empowering athletes and about being good to people and being good to people's families and how you can do that. It was fascinating. Yeah. It's a movie of a movie too. So if you want something that's kind of pretty, that's like tight, I would totally recommend that for. I had a lot of like ideological, like, I don't know, you kind of glossed over what it's like to be a black person in Oregon in 1984 a little bit more than I'm comfortable with, because you need to keep the people who are there for Ben Affleck and Matt Damon comfortable in the movie theater a little bit more than I wanted. And the music, I was like, wow, these are all bangers. Like, you're playing Violent Femmes. This is great. Who is this movie for then? Wait a second. Like, who? Oh, it's, oh, okay, here we go. And I'm watching it in Taiwan too. So that was like a whole other level. It was a fascinating experience. Totally recommend it. And because I've already gone on too long, I just want to do a quick shout out to my favorite webtoon, which is my giant nerd boyfriend by Fishball. It is a really cute slice of life romantic comedy, the equivalent of a daily comic strip, but it's been expanded to web comics format, so it's about 50 panels instead of 3. Totally love it. It's always cute. Fishball's an amazing illustrator, really gets like human movement down in a great way. Check it out. Deb, what's your shout out?
My pick is something completely different than what we just talked about, but it's still about Korean boys. It's called Boys Planet. It is a reality show where I think 98 boys from, half of them are from Korea, half of them are from Vietnam, Thailand, China, Canada, US, all competing to become the next hit K-pop stars. And it has like this live voting aspect to it. And you follow them around their dorms and you follow their heartbreaks. And some of them can't sing and some of them can't dance. And it's absolutely painful. But I'm so emotionally invested in this. It's ridiculous.
It's so funny. I just realized now that the word boys has been ruined for me. Because when you said, and there's like 98 boys, like I just think boys love. I always think boys love now. So you're salivating over like 98 boys competing. I'm like, what are they? Are they effing and essing each other? What's going on? But no, they're singing. It's their actual boys.
No, there's a little bit of a little bit of BL tension happening in this thing because they know who their audience is. But you know, like I try to shake it off and kind of go like, oh, you know, if I think too hard about it, a lot of these guys on this show could be my kid.
Yeah.
If I was very promiscuous as a high schooler, right? So it's like,
There's a reality show for that too. It's called MILF Manor, and I highly recommend.
Oh, no.
Cody Ko has been watching episodes of MILF Manor and just cringing for a half an hour. It's totally on YouTube. Check it out, Chip. You should dig that one.
I'm already feeling edgy watching this. I'm like, I like this one. This one's really cute. It's like, stop it. Stop it. You're an old lady.
At the mention of MILF Manor, Chip completely, his screen froze. It just overwhelmed his whole system. I even had him pause the uploading too.
Right. Way to go.
Right. Yeah, I'm so sorry. I'll never mention MILF Manor again.
Well, that was an interesting little batch of recommendations, but you never know what you're going to get on the Manga Splitting shoutouts. We have lots of more wonderful books to talk about this season, and so just stick around for more interesting and unexpected adventures into the world of manga. This has been Mangasplaining Episode 95. The Boxer, Volume 1 by J.H. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, Christopher and I will be chatting with comics creators, authors, and travelers, Abby Denson and Matt Lux. Want to pick up a copy of their books? Consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop. Find a shop near you at comicshoplocator.com, or check out your local library for print and digital lending options. You can also follow along with our complete reading list and show notes at mangasplaining.com. And don't forget to check out our newsletter and publishing endeavor at mangasplainingextra.com. Thanks to DADS for their musical accompaniment for this episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.